to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here. It is Tuesday. We're getting into the week. Things are just getting really, really strange out there. Oathman is in our control room, his hand hovering over the telephone. 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. Chat room is open. Webcam is running. If you're on the chat room, there's actually a webcam feed in there now in response to public demand. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about here. Turning to the economy, first of all, we're starting to see some very strange behavior coming in from these banks and credit card companies. Two stories that came out today. Apparently, starting next year, banks and credit card issuers are going to start imposing service fees on credit cards with too low a balance. So if you're carrying a zero balance on your credit card and you're paying your bills right off so that they can't charge you interest, they're going to start charging you a fee. Now remember, credit card companies are getting a percentage of the transactions from the retail end. So it's not like they're really losing money by carrying your account and giving you the card, because they get a piece of the action down at the shopping mall. But this is just another case of the bank saying, well, you know, those carbon-based life forms out there, they don't need any money. You know, we'll just find another way to take that from them. Now, another one is if you have an oil company credit card, specifically a MasterCard, if you're from Shell or Citgo or ExxonMobil or any of those that is handled through MasterCard, through Citibank, you may be in for a rude shock, because apparently Citibank is now simply closing their oil company MasterCard accounts without warning. And people who have been using the cards and paying the bills off on time are all of a sudden finding the cards deactivated and letters saying, please pay off the balance, and we don't have to tell you why we're doing this. All that's on the credit report is credit grantor has terminated the account. That's all it says. Nobody knows what's going on. Now, this ties in with something we saw happening with Citi back when the economy was starting to go south. And we went through that strange situation where Citi put serious limits on the amount of cash could be taken out of their ATMs. And they said, the official story from Citi was, hackers have broken into the ATM system, and so we're just protecting ourselves. No other bank had a similar report. No other bank had similar reduction in how much you could take out of the bank. And I said at the time, this feels to me like Citi's in a cash crunch and portends serious problems for Citi down the road. And sure enough, that was exactly what happened. Now they're starting to cancel these cards without any malfeasance on the part of the card holder. They're just saying, oh, we don't want to do this anymore. We went through this with Advanta. Advanta closed off their small business credit card line, just shut it down, saying, you know, you're all good credit risks, but we just don't have the money to loan you anymore. And that got all shut down, caused a tremendous amount of inconvenience. Now it's hitting the consumer level. So don't let them tell you about green shoots and all the rest of that stuff. It's getting ugly out there. After revising the formulas needed for calculating standard of living in the United States to bring in the rising cost of medical costs and various other things, it is now estimated that one out of every six Americans are living in poverty. Remember when we were growing up and the schools would tell us we're the greatest nation on earth and the deity sits up nights to admire us? One out of every six Americans lives in poverty. Look at your five closest friends. If they're doing okay, you're the one. Meanwhile, somebody's come out with a list of the countries with the largest gaps between the rich and the poor, the income, the wealth disparity situation. The United States is in number three. So you folks over there at Goldman Sachs, come on, you're not trying. You want to be number one. You want to gouge out the money and leave everybody around you just in total abject starvation. You've got the bronze. Go for the gold, Goldman. It's amazing stuff. Meanwhile, down in Sydney, Australia, the Sydney Diocese of the Anglican Church apparently is in serious trouble. Not from lawsuits from the priests diddling the choir boys. Apparently, they had all of their wealth in the stock market, and they have basically lost it all. It's just evaporated into that black hole of investment banking someplace out there. I love that South Park that they did about the margarita machine, and that was one of the funniest South Parks I've ever seen, where the guy's saying, well, we're going to take your money and we're going to put it in this thing, and it's gone. Just poof, just completely gone. And that is apparently what happened here to the $160 million that this church had in the stock market. And, of course, the first thing that occurs to me is, where was God? I mean, you got this entire church praying to him, and I'm going to presume, since the money didn't vanish overnight, that probably somewhere along there, the bishop or whoever the head honcho there is was saying, God, what are we doing wrong? Can we get some stock advice? Can you pick something for me? Where should I put the, should I go into gold, T-bills, whatever? Nothing. Nada. Big silence coming back. Now the church is in serious trouble. Now, speaking of serious trouble, as you know, Israel's attempt to crush out the Goldstone Report on their war crimes in Gaza has not worked out too well. In fact, to be very honest, Israel's arrogance and chutzpah and hubris has blown up in their face, because a week ago they were running around to all the other countries on earth and saying, you gosh darn better just crush this thing down. Just reject it. Shut it down. It's complete nonsense. You know, make it go away. If you don't make it go away, we're going to cause all kinds of problems. And they created a political situation where even those world leaders who wanted to help Israel couldn't, because it would have been too obvious. They were doing the bidding of a foreign government, and that does not go over very well in most countries. Not a big deal here in the United States, but other countries, those people react very negatively to the realization that their government that they voted for, that their taxes support, is actually doing the bidding of some other government on earth. That does not go over very well. So, Israel created the situation which led to the Human Rights Commission endorsing the Goldstone Report, because even Israel's best buddies didn't dare do anything about it. It was a record number of people that just didn't show up for the vote. Never mind the abstentions. There were nations that simply didn't show up to vote anyway at all, because it had become this huge political hot potato. And so now Israel is mounting this huge public relations campaign to recapture their image of poor, innocent victim. And these other people made us do it and everything. Netanyahu is vowing to fight the United Nations report. In other words, he's saying, we're going to defy the UN, which is no big surprise. They've been doing it all along. But if you remember back in 2003, defying the United Nations was one of the reasons we went in and bombed the crud out of Iraq. And so we're back into this situation of an obvious double standard where Iraq defies the United Nations, and actually they weren't. They had, in fact, gotten rid of their weapons of mass destruction, and we invade and we bomb them. Israel defies the UN over and over and over and over and over again, and nothing ever happens. And we are at the point where the world is starting to ask why. Just what's going on here that Israel has the juice to be able to get away with so much up until this point? And we know the U.S. is going to veto this report before it goes to The Hague. So Israel's never going to suffer any war crimes trials. You know, the United States is an accessory after the fact to these war crimes, and that's just the way it is. But Israel's public image is definitely taking a beating. So Netanyahu's up there, and he's screaming and crying and saying, we'll teach that UN a lesson for charging us with war crimes. We'll drop white phosphorus on all their UN schools. Oh, wait a minute. We already did that, didn't we? That's how we got into this mess. So one of the results we're seeing right now, there is a flood of TV shows coming on to the science and history and arts channels about how wonderful ancient Israel was and how our entire modern civilization rests on the wisdom and revealed knowledge of the Torah and the Old Testament, and how great it really was and how much they've contributed to the world and so forth and so on. And this is just kind of a little bit of a dodge, and we're going to take a break here. And when I come back, I'm going to explain why this is a dodge and why it really isn't relevant at all. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Cascadia Public Radio.
listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about Israel. They have really hammered their own public image over the last several weeks. Actually, it started back during Operation Cast Lead itself with the sheer arrogance of Israel's spokesman who kept saying this is all Hamas' fault, this is all Hamas, they are to blame, they are doing this, and it just the obviousness and heavy-handedness of the lies and deceptions and propaganda really called attention to itself. And ages ago, when Israel was able to exert almost dictatorial control over the media to always get their version of the story out there to the masses, they could get away with that kind of thing, as they did with the USS Liberty. It's a different world right now, and they haven't quite picked up on that. So we're seeing right now, in an attempt to repolish, to rebrand Israel's image in the post-caste-led world, they're out there just flooding the TV channels with all these wonderful shows about how great Israel is and how wonderful the biblical Hebrews were and how our entire civilization would not exist if it were not for this one little tiny tribe of Middle Eastern people way back thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago who got kicked out of Israel. Although that actually happened to the Hyksos, not the Hebrews, according to the archaeological evidence. But, okay, so here's the situation. Even if we ignore the fact that the present day Ashkenazi are not actually the descendants of the biblical Hebrews. They're actually descended from a converted Central Asian people called the Khazars. And the proof is in the skin tone. Do they look like they're from the Middle East? Of course not. So even if we set that aside, there's a reality. It doesn't matter what somebody did or what some people did thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. What matters is what they're doing today. And this is common sense. Take a look at Randy Duke Cunningham, who in his youth did some really nice things. He was a Phantom pilot in Vietnam. He shot down the legendary Colonel Toombs. He was the Navy's only ace in aerial combat during Vietnam. A war hero by any reasonable definition of the word. Then he got into politics, and then he became corrupt, and today he is in jail for bribery, as he should be. And it doesn't matter what he did before. He's in jail because of the crimes he did now. And the same thing has to apply to Israel. It doesn't matter how great and wonderful we're told they all were back in the days of David and Solomon. What matters is what Israel, the nation, the civil government, is doing today. And they have committed war crimes. And the delicious irony here is everything that they're doing to try and escape the consequences of their actions is only making the situation look worse. Their latest strategy, this just came out today, along with trying to flood the net with pro-Israel propaganda and flood the TV and the media with pro-Israel propaganda, this is their strategy. They are going to try to change the international law that governs the rule of war. Talk about arrogance. They literally say, well, okay, we did some things in there that were against the international rules of war, but we weren't wrong. The rules are wrong. Therefore, change the rules to make what we did to the Palestinians okay. That's their new strategy. And I don't think they comprehend just how bad that looks to the rest of the world. Because what they're doing is basically saying, okay, you got us. We were stealing cookies. Here's our solution. Going to change the rules to make it okay for us to steal cookies. That's it. And then everybody's happy. Okay, and we'll put the negatives away, and you won't have to explain that thing with you and the goat to your wife. So that's their new strategy here. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got a couple of callers here. We've got, let's see, Jeff in, I'm trying to read back, Jeff in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Jeff. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, there you are.
Yeah, I've listened to the show for a couple months now, and your views always seem to be the same about Israel, and they really walk the line really close to anti-Semitism. Like when you were claiming that There wasn't 6 million that really died.
Jeff, I'm gonna stop you right here now because you know something. Anytime Israel gets caught committing a war crime, planting spy devices in Lebanon, which is a violation of the UN resolution, they're openly defying the United Nations. And the first thing that Israel's defenders come up and say, oh, you know, it might be anti-Semitism. You just don't like us. Okay, Jeff. Rivero is a Sephardic name. Please don't play that anti-Semitic stuff with me. It doesn't work. Israel has been playing the anti-Semitic card for decades. They've burned it out. They've worn it out. It's lost its effectiveness. Go away. Come up with something new or shut the heck up. We're going to switch over to Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, Mike. Did you know that your website just crashed?
Yeah, but it should be coming back up right now. I got the little message. Yeah, we've been under hacker attack, and I'm not surprised. But it'll be back up here in just a few minutes.
All right. That's not why I called. It just happened, so I thought I'd tell you.
Thank you.
What I called about was in the chat room before this happened was one of the chatters was saying that Iran was off the table because Turkey is joining Russia and China and stuff like that. And I wanted your opinion on whether or not Iran was off the table.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by off the table. And by the way, the website's back up again. I just checked it.
Not bombing them.
I think in terms of getting a UN resolution to go in and bomb them, yeah, that's been off the table for quite some time. As far as getting more sanctions, that's definitely off the table. Can Israel go ahead and bomb them all by itself? Yeah, they did it to Iraq on the same flimsy excuse. And so, you know, it's nice to say we imagine a world where the rule of law is going to prevail, but you've got Netanyahu basically telling the UN to go jump in the lake over the Goldstone report. So it's a given here that Israel is absolutely going to ignore anything that the UN has to say regarding Iran. The question is who's going to come in on what side to get involved in the war here. Certainly, Russia and China are well motivated to support Iran, and the U.S. is already committed to coming on the war on Israel's side. And so the real danger here is this could easily turn into World War III, with the Americans and the Russians duking it out with nuclear weapons and Israel off to one side, laughing at how silly it was to get the superpowers to destroy each other and leave Israel and its nuclear arsenal in charge of the Middle East oil.
All right, that's what I wanted to hear was your opinion on it. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you very much. All right, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour here. And, the What Really Happened website's back up, chat room, webcam. Well, the webcam runs through different servers, so that's always up and running anyway here. Now, what's interesting, again, we're seeing, Netanyahu has come out. He is planning a battle to delegitimize the findings of the United Nations. In other words, Israel has effectively declared war on the UN. And I think it's time for the UN to fight back and stop being such pussies. Because alone among all the other member nations of the United Nations, Israel's membership had conditions. Palestinians are allowed an unconditional right of return to the homes taken from them during the formation of Israel. And if the Palestinians choose not to come back, Israel has to compensate them. Israel has never met either of those conditions. Their membership at the United Nations is therefore null and void. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And we're just dealing with some technical issues here. Anyway, we're talking about, I was checking with somebody in the chat room about, is Iran off the table? Well, unprovoked attacks against anybody are never off the table. And to clarify what we were talking about, Israel and the United States are trying to find a quote, legal, end quote, way to go in and bomb Iran for no particular reason other than it's next on the list of shall not get a Hanukkah card this year list. Okay. We have seen over the last couple of years attempts to convince the world that Iran is a threat that keep falling flat on their face. The National Intelligence estimates that Iran is not building nuclear weapons. The IAEA says Iran is not building nuclear weapons. And the problem here for Israel, and this is part of its public relations disaster right now, Iran is playing by the rules. They have signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel has not. Iran is allowing inspections of all of their nuclear facilities. Israel is not. And this year, both the United States and the United Nations, in a General Assembly resolution, called on Israel to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and allow inspections, and Israel said no. Israel is the nation that is not playing by the rules. Israel is the nation that has gone rogue. Israel is the nation that actually has nuclear weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East and a long history of belligerence towards its neighbors. Then we get people like Jeff calling in and saying, oh, you're just being an anti-Semite. No, no, no. That one's worn out. That one's worn out. Find something new. Okay? That one's worn out. You've played that card to the point where the layers of paper are coming apart. It's, you know, that one's not going to work anymore. Nobody cares about the word anymore. All righty. So we have, of course, over the weekend, we had this attack, this Jundala terror group, CIA-backed, CIA-funded group, went in and staged a bombing. This is just the latest attempt to get at Iran. We saw, of course, this last year, the so-called pro-democracy movement, an attempt to replay the coup from 1953. That kind of fizzled. And so basically, as far as Iran being off the table, the U.S. and Israel can't get sanctions. They can't overthrow the government. They can't blow up enough of them for the nation to collapse. And so on the day they decide they can't find a quote-unquote legal reason to go to war, they'll go to war anyway and just say, oh, they made us do it. I mean, that's certainly Israel's track record. Israel's own Interior Ministry website confirms that the Egypt-brokered ceasefire between Hamas and Israel had lasted for 6 months without incident. Hamas had succeeded in stopping the rockets being fired into Israel, including those fired by their rival, the Palestinian Authority, to try and kick up problems. It was Israel that broke the ceasefire and launched Operation Cast Lead. And, of course, Israel's propaganda during the whole time, we've got this wonderful, a couple of videos up at whatreallyhappened.com, going back and reprising all the statements Israel was making to the media. Oh, it's all Hamas' fault. They made us do it and blame them. They are the ones who are wrong. We're Israel. We're above the law. We could never do anything wrong. And so when Israel attacks Iran and kicks off World War III for the rest of us, they'll do the same thing. Oh, Iran, it's all Iran's fault because Iran did not do what we told them to do. Which is basically when you see people like Hillary Clinton running around and saying that Iran is not living up to their international obligations. And you can't peg her down. Just exactly what international obligations are you talking about? Because they signed the NPT. They're allowing inspections. They're building peaceful power plants, which they're allowed to do under the treaty. What international obligations? And it always comes down to they won't do what we tell them to do. I'm sorry, that's not an international obligation. There is no law anywhere. There's no UN resolution anywhere that says other countries must do what the U.S. or Israel tell them to do. It's not there. So if you want to talk about international obligations, let's talk about Israel's membership at the United Nations. It is contingent. In fact, Israel is the only nation that was admitted to the United Nations with conditions. And the conditions were Palestinians have an unqualified right of return to the homes they lost during the creation of Israel. And Palestinians, if they choose not to return to their homes, are entitled to full compensation by the government of Israel. Israel has not kept either of these conditions. Palestinians are not allowed a right of return. In fact, Israel continues to demolish Palestinian homes without compensation in order to make way for Jewish structures. They have almost succeeded in encompassing the entire city of Jerusalem. That, too, is a defiance of the United Nations. I mean, the list of UN resolutions that Israel has defied, it's pages and pages and pages. And a lot of them are on the city of Jerusalem. which the United Nations has repeatedly said, this is a shared international city. It does not belong to any one nation. Israel's basic law says, we own Jerusalem. We own it all. It's all ours. God said so. There, in fact, is no other nation on earth, including Iraq and Iran, that has defied the United Nations as many times and as openly as Israel. So anybody who thinks that, you know, oh, you shouldn't make Israel a pariah state, I'm sorry, Israel makes Israel a pariah state by their actions. And playing this anti-Semitic card, this is absolutely nonsense. We don't hate Israel because they're Jewish. We hate Israel because they're committing war crimes. That's a difference. Anti-Semitism is hating Israel for who they are. The just and righteous opposition of the world to Israel is based on what they do. And trying to blur the two is, well, it's dishonest at the very least, and worst. If Israel goes out there and continually tries to blur the line between Israel's actions and the Jewish people, then it is Israel itself that is setting up the Jewish people as targets for any political, public backlash that may occur down the road. It is Israel that is making the world a more dangerous place for Jewish people, and they've got to stop it. We're going to go to the phones. Ed in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Ed. What's on your line? What's on your mind today?
How you doing, Mike?
Doing fine. What's up?
Yeah, my dad started a family. They're Eastern Orthodox Russians. And in Philadelphia, there's got to be over 100,000 Russian Jews there. And they got blonde hair, blue eyes. They don't go to any kind of services. They're not really Jews, you know. And that's the same ones that are in Israel. There's, you know, that's the ones running Israel right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we were conditioned in our minds, you know, I'm Catholic and all this, and you hear Israel, you know, and that's God's land. It's, you know, Israelis are great people. But, you know, the cities are loaded with whorehouses in Israel. They treat people horrible. And, you know, I don't know what to say. You know, they're not, you know, it's not everybody's, you know, people are brainwashed, you know, with the word Israel. It's like a pretty word or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure the Russians are sitting back, and they're probably hoping that maybe the Israelis and the Iranians take out each other, and then they'll be, you know, have the power monopoly over there.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
They probably wouldn't mind seeing Israel being wiped off the face of the earth, or Iran. They don't probably care, you know.
Well, I think at this point, Vladimir Putin has, you know, and I'm not a fan of the Russians, although certainly what they've got now is a lot better than they had under the Soviet system. But Putin strikes me as a very professional leader. He doesn't go off for bluster and whatnot, and I think he understands that the world is going to probably be a lot better off, you know, without starting a new major war in that part of the world. And there's no way to really get rid of Israel without getting into war with the U.S. There's no way to get rid of Iran without, you know, tripping off another situation like that. I think most mature leaders want the path of peace. I certainly do. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com.
And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we're dealing with some technical issues. I think we got the hamster back in his cage, and he's in there running and spinning the wheel and generating the electricity we need to keep the show going here. All right, turning to some other news here. As you know, I am not a big fan of the Transportation Safety Administration. I don't like being fondled. I don't like having to watch while my wife gets fondled, and they destroyed one of my laptops many, many years ago. And it's, you know, they give me the song and dance about how you can't sue them, you can't file paperwork because they're protected by the law. I think they may have been shucking and jiving me on that one, but it's very, very hard to complain against these people. However, interesting story. Out of Philadelphia, apparently a TSA screener has admitted stealing laptops and video game toys from passengers' checked luggage. And he's not one of the screeners at the actual security gate. He's one of the TSA inspectors that goes through your check bag. Do you know how they make you put those locks on there that only the TSA can open? And this is what happens when the TSA open them. They're taking stuff. And I've had that happen to me, too. Not in the United States. I had it happen to me in Heathrow Airport. I'm sorry, Thief Row Airport is what they call it now. And we had an ugly situation where, just right down here in Honolulu, where four of the TSA luggage checkers were running a burglary ring. Basically, they were just looting the luggage as it came on through. This is very bad for tourism. Even before our economy went into the Al-Qaeda, tourism was in decline across the United States. And, of course, here in Hawaii, we are an economy that, for the most part, is dependent on tourism, even more so because the state government, in their infinite wisdom, has now canceled all the tax credit incentives for film and television production and high-tech research and development. We were trying to get a little bit of a high-tech industry going here in Hawaii so that when tourism is down and when agriculture is in decline, and we actually don't have a lot of that left here in Hawaii, at least on this island, the fields keep getting plowed over for condo developments, most of which are sitting empty right now, I might add. And so the key to survival in a changing world is diversification. And unfortunately, every time the economy is doing well, and we say now's the time to diversify, why diversify? The economy is doing well. And then when the economy goes bad, we say, look, we got to diversify. Oh, we can't afford to do that now. And, boy, this is the incredible wisdom we have of our local government. So anyway, over in Philadelphia, they caught another TSA screener stealing laptops. Folks, who's the biggest danger to your life? Is it the terrorists? Or is it the TSA? Who's the real threat to your life? Al-Qaeda, whoever they are, or the U.S. government? It's just amazing here. All righty. Now, this is kind of an interesting story. This is getting onto the health insurance coverage because, you know, we're in that situation where they're still talking about health care reform, and they're going to guarantee that every American will have health care coverage by ordering you to go out and buy health care coverage. Well, this interesting story here where this gentleman had been working at a large corporation, had health insurance, lost his job, went into business for himself, went in and got his own health insurance policy for his family from United Health Card. And United Health Card sent him a letter saying that his daughter was going to be excluded from coverage because she's very small and very lightweight for her age. And apparently United Health Card has set up the standard of what are considered acceptable heights and body weights at different ages. And if you're outside of those limits, they will not cover you. Okay, it is a standard, a rather arbitrary one. And I can understand for some older people who might be seriously obese, yeah, there's some health consequences there. But for them to say that this little girl is just too small and too light to be covered, and I began thinking, you know, you've got this standard, you've got this insurance company that we're all going to be ordered to go do business with, and they're going to have standards saying, well, we don't have to cover people who are outside the standard. Over time, the people outside the standard are going to get sick and die, and the people inside the standard are going to be given health care and predominantly, preferentially survive. So if you do that long enough, all human beings are going to look like the defined standard. There won't be anybody who doesn't fit the defined standard. So I'm wondering if this defined standard includes blonde hair and blue eyes, mein Führer. Because it sounds to me like we're starting to see the beginnings of a new eugenics program in the United States. We will take care of the human beings that meet these criteria, but not the others. And folks, a little bit of history they don't teach you in those state schools. Adolf Hitler got all of his ideas about race hygiene and eugenics from the United States. It was a big movement in the 1930s. You can look it up on Google. Adolf Hitler got his inspiration for wanting to breed and create the pure Aryan race from American research in eugenics. It was because of Hitler that the movement staggered and fell, and it looks like it's beginning to emerge again by defining standards of who will be given health care and who will not. I think it's a very, very dangerous situation here because the standards are rather arbitrary. And once you get into arbitrary standards of who will live and who will die, I don't think I want to live in a society that values human life that cheaply. I really don't. Now, there has been a huge amount of concern over this upcoming conference in December, December 7th through the 18th. And they're going to be pushing forward this Copenhagen Climate Change Treaty. This is like the Kyoto Accords, only on steroids. And a lot of people, including, I'm going to hold this story into the next hour because we've got another caller on the line and I don't want to make him wait. Mike in Georgia, aloha, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, you had a couple of news items you've had posted that I really found amusing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the one with the Florida health officials talking about how they're going to reject terminal cancer patients and MS patients. And the reason they're going to do this is so they'll have room for the flu sufferers.
Yeah, we need to put that in context. What the article was saying was in the event of a flu pandemic and a shortage of medical facilities, that they were going to triage who would and would not get treated. And basically they're saying people who are already suffering from a terminally ill disease, let them die, blah, 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 blah. We know there were some very ugly stories coming out of New Orleans as those very poorly maintained levees collapsed and the hospitals were flooded and they couldn't get patients out of there. There were some persistent stories where they were having to say, who can we save and who are we just going to leave behind? And we do know that patients were abandoned in place in some of those hospitals.
Well, I've had the flu and I've got MS, and I'd much rather get in the hospital to get some painkillers for MS than I would be concerned about being treated for the flu. And the other article that I really liked was the one where the feds are going to turn the blind eye to the medical marijuana now. Now, we've got an illegitimate U.S. government, and they've criminalized victimless crimes, and now they're announcing a policy decision where they're going to selectively enforce the laws. This is wonderful.
Well, we got a situation here in Hawaii where the voters down on Maui put through their own initiative to basically say enforcement of the marijuana laws will be the lowest priority for the Maui police, which means if there are no rapes and robberies and murders to solve and nobody's running the red lights or anything, then you can go out and enforce the marijuana laws. And the mayor of Maui basically said, I am absolutely not going to yield to the will of the people. And in fact, eradication and enforcement efforts are escalating down there, and they're spending something like five times as much money to stamp out the marijuana crops as it would be to just go in there and buy it and then burn it yourself. So it's a very, very wasteful situation. The goal here, of course, is to keep people buying booze, which is taxed. There's a tax stamp on top of that bottle, or to keep them going to cocaine or heroin, which are brought in by entities connected to the government itself and making a tremendous amount of money. But the reason they're stamping hard on the marijuana and the meth labs, because that's stuff that can be grown and created locally, and they can't control it, and they can't take profit off of it. And that's why those are the focus of all the drug eradication efforts. Hardly anybody talks about cocaine anymore, because that traffic is completely owned by the Cocaine Importation Agency. If you go back, look for a book called Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA by Terry Reed. Almost impossible to find for obvious reasons. Tell you the whole story. We got to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show today, and we've got a lot of stuff to be talking about. I started to broach this subject before the phone call in the last segment of the last hour here, and it has to do with the Copenhagen Climate Change Treaty. Now, supposedly the heads of state of several nations are going to be going to Copenhagen between December 7th and the 18th, and they're going to sign this treaty, which is sort of the Kyoto Accords on steroids. And many, many people, including Lord Monckton, are saying that this is the first step in the creation of a global world government. They want to sell you the idea of a global environmental authority to deal with human-caused global warming. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. The Earth isn't getting any warmer. Sudden climate change. I mean, do you understand what's going on here? They're basically trying to take something that happens naturally, turn it into a crisis in order to convince you you must submit yourself to a new global government, which will come with global taxation and even more layers of abstraction between you and the ruling party. See, when you have a state government, it's pretty much accessible if you want to. You can go talk to your state legislator. They're family and friends in many cases. When I lived in New Hampshire, my uncle was a state legislator. And I got to tour the Capitol building and that whole situation. Here in Hawaii, I go to the state capitol all the time talking about various pieces of legislation which relate to our life here. I've been to the governor's mansion a couple of times. Talk to the governor about all kinds of stuff. Mayor Mufi Hanneman, I did some political advertisements for him. It's all reachable. It's part of your community. Your government is right there. You interact with them. They work with you to hopefully create a better life. Not working out so well right now, but when you have a big national imperial government like the United States, I've never been to Washington, D.C. Not once in my entire life. Love to go. Love to visit the Smithsonian. I donated a whole box of my old NASA memorabilia to the Smithsonian years ago. Got a very nice letter from them. They were very polite. But it's unreachable. And if you go to Washington, D.C. today and you walk into the Capitol building, it has been completely revamped so that the area where you, the hoi polloi, the peones, are allowed to wander does not connect with the actual legislative chambers. You can't walk over and say hi to a congressman. There's a big Lexan wall between you, like you're at a zoo, or actually, you know, the congressman can walk through and look through the glass and say, ah, there's the herd animals that we're sucking so much blood from in order to survive. That's how unreachable the national government is. I don't know about you. I've never actually met a president, not once. I saw Obama from a tremendous distance before he was president. The last time I got close to a president, there was Lexan and Secret Service and dogs and horses and all and shotguns and all that other stuff. And it was just, that's how unreachable it is. Huge bulletproof limousines and that kind of situation. Can you imagine how much worse it will be with a global government? You will never see them. You will never hear them other than on TV issuing their pronouncements for what the world must do for them for the next day. They'll be up there on Mount Olympus, aloft, unreachable, untouchable. You will never, ever get a chance to directly interact with them, to convey your concerns about life to them. That's the problem with the global government. And as I've said before, global government is a bad idea for a wide variety of reasons. I've been through them all once already. I've even enshrined them in the permanent demo for this radio show. We don't need to go over them again. But we're hearing all this warning that they're going to sell a global government to deal with climate change. And, folks, it's a scam. It is an absolute scam. Climate changes all the time. Look at the geological, paleontological history of planet Earth. The climate is always changing. It's always getting warmer. It's always getting colder in long 100,000-year cycles. This idea that this is a problem that must be dealt with is nonsense. One might as well attempt to legislate the tides. And by the way, this actually did happen once. In ancient Rome, I'm a little fuzzy, it was either Nero or Caligula, and basically was having a picnic at the ocean. The tide started to come in, and they ordered the Roman troops to flood the ocean to keep the tide from coming in and spoiling their picnic. It didn't work. And the fact that our global government people blew it so badly on the global warming issue, we don't dare let them be in charge of the entire planet. They're in their Copenhagen Climate Change Treaty. They don't even know what they're dealing with. It was only a few years ago they were screaming about the planet was getting warmer. Now they're not sure anymore. Now it's getting colder. They can't even forecast what's happening, which means they can't actually preempt anything. They could take the planet in a completely wrong direction. But they don't care, because it's not about global warming or global cooling or ice ages. It's about taking control. Every century or two, the human race is cursed with a sociopath or a group of sociopaths who are just convinced the planet would be so much better if it was all controlled by them. And folks, it's got nothing to do with reality and wise rule. It has everything to do with vanity and ego. There is something about the sociopathic mind where they just want to stand on top of that pyramid built to their glory and scream, "I'm king of the world." And they don't care how many people have to die or live lives of poverty and desperation to achieve it. In their minds, it is a glorious goal. And they will build sphinxes to their memory that will last 4,000 years. I think Hitler thought his monuments were going to last 1,000 years. They lasted only 12, not counting his constant adoration in movies coming out of Hollywood. I do wish they would shut up about him. So they're basically, you know, my position is what is needed in our lives is less government. We've already got too much government. It is a rule of thumb in business that the management of a company should never absorb more than 10% of that company's activity. Here in the United States, it's already at 50%. And now they're talking about adding another layer of government above us. And they're trying to backdoor it in by saying, well, we really need a global authority to deal with the climate. Folks, they can't change the climate. They absolutely cannot. All they're going to do is they're going to use it as an excuse to impose carbon taxes on you, to take money from you. They have been doing cap and credit carbon taxes in Europe for a couple of years now. And it's made the brokerage for the carbon credits very rich. That's Al Gore and his buddies. And it hasn't impacted the economy, environment at all. It's just another way to suck money and obedience out of the people. And it works only if you go along with it. Now, Lord Monckton is saying that Obama is getting ready to surrender U.S. sovereignty by signing this treaty and turning over control of our internal economy and environmental whatever to this global body. I don't know that our national sovereignty is Obama's to sign away, because that sovereignty belongs to we the people. And nowhere in the Constitution is Barack Obama given the authority to sign control of the people of this country over to an external authority. It's not in there. And the 10th Amendment forbids him from simply assuming that. So as far as I'm concerned, the instant Obama's signature goes on that Copenhagen Treaty, he has committed an act of treason against the people of the United States of America, justifying immediate arrest and imprisonment, prosecution, sentencing. Lock him up. Book him, Dano. It's not his to give away. The only thing Barack Obama can give away or give control over away is federal land. Federal reservations, Washington, D.C. itself, the military bases. He does not have the legal authority to allow an external body to come in and have control over your home. He doesn't. He's not allowed to give away the sovereignty of our country. It's not in there. It's just not in there. All right, that's it for our first segment. We're going to take a break here, take a few deep breaths, drink some water. We're going to come back, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Call in, join us on the air, let us know what you're thinking about. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go. You can burn up our masks.
tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And this just came in over the break. I was checking my email. The National Lawyers Guild calls for urgent action on Goldstone recommendations. The National Lawyers Guild calls on the United States to support or at least not oppose the UN Human Rights Council resolution based on the Goldstone report concerning war crimes and possible crimes against humanity committed in Gaza when it comes up for a vote in the UN Security Council. However, this is the good part, folks. Pay attention. There'll be a quiz next period. Should the U.S. veto, the National Lawyers Guild urges the General Assembly to itself implement the recommendations of the Goldstone report based on the Uniting for Peace Resolution 377. Which states that, quote, if the Security Council, because of lack of unanimity of the permanent members, fails to exercise its primary responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security, the General Assembly shall consider the matter immediately with a view to making appropriate recommendations to members for collective measures to maintain or restore international peace and security. So, in other words, what they're saying, this is a real monkey wrench into Israel's plan. Because Israel's gone out and said to the U.S., thou shalt veto the Goldstone report in the U.N. Security Council. And Obama has said, I will veto the Goldstone report. And that's going to be the end of it, they thought. But apparently, under this Resolution 377, the General Assembly can take its own action independent of the Security Council. And the United States does not have a veto over the General Assembly. This may be the end of the Security Council. Because if the Security Council cannot rein Israel in, if they cannot take them to task, hold them to account for their war crimes because of the U.S., it's going to discredit the entire Security Council, and the General Assembly may become the major power there. And this is going to be interesting because I've been saying this all along. Efforts to create a global government all centered on the United Nations. This Copenhagen Treaty is a U.N. project. The global government being implemented through this Copenhagen Treaty, this environmental dodge, is a U.N. group. But if the United Nations cannot send Israel to The Hague for their war crimes, if the United Nations cannot send the United States to The Hague for war crimes, then the credibility of a global government is destroyed. It's absolutely kneecapped. And that is why it is so important. Good for this National Lawyers Guild. I will put this up on the website after the show. But keep that in mind. Resolution 377, General Assembly has the right to take action themselves directly if the Security Council fails its primary responsibility of keeping or restoring peace in the world. In other words, if the Security Council can't control Israel, will not take action against Israel to keep Israel from committing war crimes, the General Assembly has the legal authority to do so themselves. That is going to complicate things tremendously from Israel's point of view. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones. Mark in Texas, aloha. Mark, welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, Mike, the first thing I wanted to say to you from all the other people in the chat room is thank you. We now have video. We've got everything. We are full bore, ready to rock and roll in the chat room, and we thank you for it. You spoil us, man.
Well, yes, I do. I'm glad it worked out. It was a lot of coding to get it all working and get the little the thing on the web page to come up a little bit earlier so people could get to the show a little bit sooner. You know, it's all in good fun. And one of these days I'll redecorate this office so that it looks like there's actually something here instead of a bunch of techno junk. But I'm glad you enjoy the website.
No, thank you, Mike. And don't redecorate anything. It would change how we felt about everything if we saw it any differently. If you cleaned anything up, we'd think we'd all have to run over there and put you in a hospital or something.
Okay.
We'd hate for something bad to get put in you.
Well, can I use that as an excuse for my wife when she's trying to get me to clean up this office? You know,
yes.
I can't do it. The chat room people said not to.
Yes, okay. Tell Claire that she's been outvoted. And you know what?
Democracy in action.
Exactly. And, you know, on the outvoted part, I want to back up and talk about this Semitic, anti-Semitic part and kind of give the people who aren't on the website or in the chat room a little understanding of this whole thing. This whole website's called whatreallyhappened.com. And, you know, Mike, I've heard of them. Been here. Yeah, no, pretty good place. But, Mike, the thing about it is that you allow the members to post there. And as someone that is allowed to post by you, all of us come under scrutiny. And we all try to put the facts in front of everyone, including yourself. No one's immune to anything. No one, including yourself. And if Semitic or anti-Semitic came into it, the facts are the facts. They're not racist. There's nothing racist about a fact. It is what it is. And to pass muster through your website, you're going to state a fact. And that's the only thing you're going to get through there. And at the end of the day, I don't think that has any room. I think it's a weak excuse for anyone who wants to come at you or anybody else. If you don't state a fact, then you can get ready to be tackled by however many members that are in there, because they're going to be monitoring you.
And well, here's the situation. Let me cut in on this thing. This thing about anti-Semitic as a label. Israel has gotten away with this for decades and decades and decades, and it's simply a way of shouting down opposition without actually having to discuss the issues themselves. Oh, you ran over Rachel Curry with the bulldozer. What are you, some kind of an anti-Semite? Oh, you're knocking over Palestinian homes in defiance of international law. What are you, an anti-Semite? And it's the same litany over and over again of never dealing with Israel's actions, but instead screaming, oh, you just hate us. And you know something? Can you imagine a bunch of Germans going around and deflecting criticism of Adolf Hitler by saying, you just don't like German people. You're anti-Aryan. Hitler didn't do anything wrong. You just hate the German people. It doesn't make any sense. And yet Israel has gotten away with this for decades. And enough is enough. They've worn it out. It's completely burned out.
Well, Mike, there's one other thing I wanted to interject before you go to break is I read an article this weekend, and I'm a big sports fan, but apparently there is an Irish tenor that sings the national anthem or God Bless America for the Yankees. I'm not sure what it is. Well, anyway, there was someone moving into or looking at an apartment where he lives, and someone said something to him about someone moving in there, and he said, well, as long as they're not Jewish. Mike has been completely banned from the Yankee organization.
Well, that was not an appropriate comment. Let's not kid ourselves. That actually is a case of a racist comment, and I'm afraid I can't sympathize with him on that one. Okay? Anyway, we got to take a break here. Thank you, Mark, for the phone call. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go back to the phone. We're still talking with Mark in Texas. And aloha, Mark. Just pick up right where you left off.
Well, Mike, all I wanted to say is that I felt like the gentleman who sang the tenor at the Yankees games was out of line as well. He said he meant it as a joke. But at the same time, the whole point that I took out of it was the power of what it brought down on him. The power of, if he would have said, as long as it's not a Mexican, which, you know, down here in Texas, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Any racism is bad. I think you would be the first to agree with that. You are the first that would always say that. But you know what, Mike? It's that perception that people take from you that is wrong. And just like the caller earlier wanted to pin that tag on you and go ahead and start that argument, that's wrong. A fact is a fact. And that's what
true.
Really gets
that's
me
true.
Wound up. You can't
now,
dispute it. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just want to comment on the thing. You are correct. The fury that descended on this gentleman's head for that comment was extreme and considerably out of proportion. If he had said, as long as it's not a Mexican or an Irish or an Italian or a black, there would have been a little bit of a furor. When it's directed against a Jew, yes, it triggers this incredible response, which is an illustration of how well organized and how powerful that club is and is used. The problem is, and the reason it's beginning to fall apart, is that club of racism gets misused and aimed at targets that really don't deserve it. And a classic case is, anytime somebody talks about Rachel Corrie or about the Palestinians or about white phosphorus or about the USS Liberty or about the Levon affair or the bombing of the King David Hotel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they bring up the same club. Racism, 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 anti-Semite, 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 you hate us, you hate us, you hate us, you hate us. To the point where we're ready to say, you're right, we hate you, go away. And it's just this continual annoyance situation, and you have Jewish writers who themselves concede that Israel has to create hostility and anti-Semitism in order to use it as a shield for their political activity. That if there wasn't any, that they're going to have to find some other device to act as cover for their political activity. I had somebody early on that was attacking me and my website and everything. And he made this public statement, which kind of blew up in his face, but he said he may not be an anti-Semite now, but he sure will be when I get done with him. And that was kind of that attitude of, we're going to provoke you until you do something we can use to attack your character. And it's just the way they play the game. And to them,
the only thing I was going to say, Mike, is that the only thing that bothers me about them is all of the information they put out themselves of their arrogance about their own racism, and we don't care. We are so-and-so, and we can do this. And you can read it time and time again, quote-unquote. And that's what really bothers me, irregardless of who you are or what color you are or what religion you ascribe to.
Well, I'm trying to remember, I think it may have been either Ariel Sharon or Netanyahu who basically came out and said, Israel has the right to judge the rest of the world, but the rest of the world does not have the right to judge Israel. And that's really at the heart of the double standard and hypocrisy, where Israel really does see themselves as so above the rest of humanity that the same rules should not apply. It is betrayed by this latest announcement from Netanyahu that their solution to the Goldstone Report is going to be to demand that the rest of the world change the rules so that what Israel does in Gaza is now legal under international law. And to you and I and the people listening to the show and the people watching on the website, this almost seems absurd in its arrogance. But to Netanyahu and his people, this is the next logical course. We got caught breaking the rules. Therefore, we must change the rules retroactively so that, we will not be punished. And we had a caller into the show the other week that said this cultural blindness on their part of really not seeing themselves as part of the rest of the human race is the reason why they keep, they keep pushing too far. They don't know when to quit. And I think Netanyahu just crossed that line again, because people are going to look at this idea where Netanyahu is, with a very straight, serious face, going to say, change the rules so that we're okay now. And that's not going to go over well at all.
Well, and the sad part about it is that it keeps everything in the world disrupted. And how could it just continue and continue and continue? And now we're over into Pakistan with all of this and this disruption that just continues on. And I think we're starting to see a breaking within the ranks from what we've seen posted at whatreallyhappened.com of their own meetings and the parties within all of this. And I think there's a little dissension coming out of Russia, and you may have a little more on that than I do. It just looks like they're not going to allow it to come to vote in the UN, but they voted against it or something. You can probably
You mean the Iran situation?
Yes, and of course the Goldstone report as well, as far as Russia voting to go with it and give it validity and everything. And
okay, now if we are to believe Israel, okay, Russia has already committed to vetoing the Goldstone report. Of course, we were also told Russia was going to vote against it at the United Nations Human Rights Council, and they voted for it. Right now, because as I said at the beginning of the show, Israel has created a political climate in which even those world leaders who want to help it are afraid to do so, because it looks like they're just obeying Israel's orders. And that is not something that goes over very well publicly. If Israel had kept a low profile and just done this very much on the QT and, you know, said private meetings, we really need you to do a favor for us on this, would have been one thing. But Israel went public and said, you guys will vote this down. We don't deserve this. It's all Hamas' fault, blah, blah, blah. And they created a political climate where the resolution got voted through because it was too embarrassing not to. And the same thing may backfire them in the United Nations. Now, we already know the U.S. is committed to vetoing the Goldstone report in the Security Council. Now we're hearing the National Lawyers Guild floating this idea that under Resolution 377, the General Assembly will be empowered to act despite the Security Council. And this is a whole new way to push this whole thing forward. And the bottom line is, I am convinced that Israel will never be held to account for their war crimes any more than we will be able to hold George Bush and his torture masters to account for their war crimes. But public image is such an important part of foreign policy in the modern day world. And Israel is just taking a bruising right now. And as they get dragged down into the gutter and are revealed as a blood-soaked, schizophrenic paranoid, soaked in the blood of innocent victims of their own hallucinations, the U.S. is being dragged down there with them. And that is, you know, right now the United States needs as many friends as they can get. And backing Israel unquestioningly in this war crime situation is going to cost us those friends that we need to soften the blow of our economic crash.
Well, and that's the other thing is that with the dollar tanking and them trying to keep the dollar low, and what that's going to end up doing overall in being able to support them in everything they're doing.
Okay, Mark, we're out of time, Mark. I got to let you go. I'm sorry, but we're here for a commercial break, and I need the last segment to cover a couple of other stories. So, Mark, thanks an awful lot. Call in again. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twists and steel, what's swept away? Did these remaining holes reveal what's really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Last segment of our show today. Here, got a couple of things I want to talk about. In this time of severe financial hardship for we, the people of the United States of America, it is good to know that the U.S. government still has the courage to go out and just squander millions of dollars on some of the silliest things you have ever heard of in your life. Apparently, there is a project, the DARPA project, and sometimes DARPA comes up with some interesting stuff like the internet, and sometimes they come up with some really goofball things like the spray sticky foam that's supposed to immobilize you. Their latest project is they're taking real live insects and they're wiring them with radios and chips to be able to steer them remotely as they fly along and take microphones into your home and your building. And I'd kind of wondered why the cockroaches were exploding in a ball of fire when I hit them, but this may be the explanation. But where is PETA at this particular point? I mean, for all this talk about, oh, you know, the pit bulls are being abused and Michael Vick's and all this other thing about cruelty and save the whales and all the rest of it stuff. I mean, aren't insects also life forms? And is it not cruel for them to be wired with these chips to create this Frankenstein-like monster? I mean, if you see the illustration, we've got it at the front of whatreallyhappened.com. They're basically, it looks like something out of a horror movie. A biological, it's like, you know, the Kmart version of a cyborg. It's a living thing with this board attached to it and all these wires driven into its body so that they can, with a radio signal, steer it left and right as it flies. Now, first of all, I think it's an extraordinarily dumb thing to be doing anyway. I remember a story years and years ago where the Central Intelligence Agency took a cat and surgically implanted a listening device in it and let it loose on the grounds of the Soviet embassy. This is going back a ways. And they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this thing. And it only lasted 2 weeks because the cat got out, ran out into the road, and got run over by a car. And that was kind of the end of that experiment. And the only thing that they found, the only thing they learned in the Russian embassy with all this work and tormenting, the torture of this cat had to endure, having the antenna implanted along its tail and this radio and battery and everything inserted into its abdomen, the only thing they learned is that the Soviet embassy had mice. That's all they got for this thing. And now here they are doing it again, live remote-controlled beetles to bug conversations. Ooh, aren't we being witty and cute with this headline? Take a look at the photo. Now imagine if that was being done to you. And yes, I know it's not politically, you know, bugs and insects aren't politically on the same level as cute little furry dogs and things like that. But remember, you know, it's all packaging. It's all packaging. And it's all very, very biased because, I mean, basically, you know, a squirrel is just a rat with a cute, fluffy tail. But because he's got the tail, we go ooh and ah, we don't want to hurt them. And if it doesn't have the cute, fluffy tail, throw them in a trap and poison them and throw them in the garbage disposal. Okay? So where do you draw the line between an animal that we should be concerned about versus an animal we should not be concerned about? And yes, I swat insects that bite me. Okay? The rest I leave for the geckos to eat. But first of all, the success of this system is very much in doubt. It's just another way to waste taxpayer money. And in the end, it does underscore the hypocrisy of these so-called humane societies who are going to look at this Frankenstein's monster of an insect that is part living organism and part very expensive electronics and say, okay, I guess that's cool to do because it's the U.S. government. Anyway, now, another thing the U.S. government is doing with your tax money, the U.S. Intelligence community, Qtel, which is the CIA's investment firm, they have their own investment bank in Qtel, and they're basically they're investing in Visible Technologies. This is a software firm that specializes in monitoring social media. Huge investment there, and guys, I'm going to save you a lot of money. In Qtel, CIA, if you're listening to this broadcast, okay, the people on those social networking sites really do not look like living gods with huge genitalia. They're lying. People lie on the social networks. You better accept that up front or you're going to have a lot of embarrassments down the road. The other situation is what this is all about. They're not really tracking all of your online social commentary. Most of it's, you know, it's casual conversation anyway. This is an attempt because Twitter proved to be so powerful a propaganda device during the attempted Iranian coup. They tried to flood it with propaganda. The counter flood, the counter propaganda defeated it and brought the coup to a crashing halt. And so what they want to do is the government is still trying to figure out a way to get you off of the internet, to get you off of your Twitters and your Facebooks and all the rest of those social networking sites and get you going back to the TV networks to get your news. That's what this is about. They're trying to scare you from communicating with each other over the social networking sites because they have become very powerful gathering places. They've become the modern liberty trees. And for those of you who don't remember what I'm talking about, during the run-up to the American Revolution, certain specific trees around the various New England towns were designated Liberty trees. And people would simply write their opinion about what the British were doing, and they would nail them to the tree. And everybody knew you went to that tree and you'd get the latest messages. And the British would cut the trees down and burn them. And immediately another tree would be designated, this is the new Liberty tree, and people would post their messages there. So these social networking sites, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, these are the modern Liberty trees. People post there. They put their messages there. More and more of the conversation on these social networking sites is turning political. And the government can't control it. They can't propagandize it. They can't buy it up. So what they're going to do, they're trying to scare you. They're trying to put out the idea, oh, be careful what you say on Twitter. The government is listening now. They're reading what you put on Facebook. You better not say anything the government might not like. There's 300 million Americans. And the 250 million of them not working for the government are pissed off. Do you really think InQtel and Visible Technologies is able to actually track the email and text messages and SMS and Facebook and rest of it of 250 million Americans every single day? No, they can't. It's a bluff. It is a bluff. They're trying to scare you into going back to being isolated and dependent on the corporate media for your view of reality. It's not going to work. In fact, it's a little sick and pathetic that they're even trying. But that's what's going on here. All right, we're getting to the end of the show here. A couple more stories I have here. First of all, somebody did a study of tax returns prepared by the Internal Revenue Service Free Assistant Program. 41% are in error. Wrong, messed up. If the IRS's own trained people can't do a correct tax return, it tells you the tax code is unworkably complex. It is time to scrap it, starting with the 16th Amendment, which may not have even been ratified. Okay, health news here real quick. We all know about high fructose corn syrup. I've talked about this in the past. It's nasty stuff. Why do companies use it? It's very sweet and it's cheap. Oh, it's so inexpensive. We'll put it everywhere. They even have it in ketchup. It's in soda pop. I mean, you have to be very, very careful because insensitive individuals, and I'm one of them, I was about ready to basically go to the doctor and say, I think I've got hypoglycemia or diabetes. Come to find out, high fructose corn syrup will provoke the insulin reaction, but it's the wrong kind of sugar for the insulin to react with. And so high fructose corn syrup, if you're already borderline hypoglycemia, will put you into these sugar crashes. I got the high fructose corn syrup out of my life. I never get any of these symptoms ever again. I'm perfectly okay. And on top, here's the plus for you, I'm losing weight without even really trying. I mean, I have been gaining weight steadily since my college days. And couldn't win the Battle of the Bulge. And now all of a sudden, I get the high fructose corn syrup out of my life. I get the aspartame out of my life. I get the MSG out of my life. I'm starting to slim down. My wife says I'm on the verge of looking good. Anyway, real quick, because I hear the music. Turns out high fructose corn syrup, when it is heated, produces a toxic chemical that you are eating and drinking, and it may be a contributing factor to the demise of the honeybees. That's it. We're out of time. Thanks to everybody who called. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central, here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, stay well, eat lots of cinnamon, be very skeptical of anything the government and corporate media are telling you, and aloha, America.
Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm pleased to announce a completely new and exciting way to listen to your favorite GCN Live program on your telephone. Simply by calling 712-338-7200, you'll be hearing your favorite GCN Live programs in seconds. Tune into all of our channels. I have made sure that everyone who wants to hear GCN Live will have the opportunity to do so. Call to listen at 712-338-7200. That's 712-338-7200. Thanks again for listening to GCNLive.com. We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.